Royal Conservatory Orchestra, one performance only. Friday, November the 30th at 8 p.m., Convocation Hall, University of Toronto. Ticket prices for Orchestral Challenges in the Light, $5 and $3. Call 961-9594.
And my next piece of music is something I'm playing to have John Cage here. This is Pygmies in Africa singing Oh My Darling Clementine. Here you go. This is the end of the honey gathering song. I miscued it. Oh dear. This is CKLN. And pretty soon you'll have the song. Okay? Are you ready? African pygmies, and as I said, it's
How tall are they?
Well, it doesn't say on the album, but the interesting thing on the album is that they don't actually have the credit on the jacket because they're afraid of copyright problems. So it says there are five cuts on that side, and then you open up the record and you find a surprise cut.
It's really beautiful music. It's so simple and so happy.
And it's really nice, the clapping, all the, like, it's quite complex harmonic and percussive sort of qualities.
It gave me the feeling it was going to get faster, but it didn't.
No, it's so short, too. I would have rathered it be a bit longer. Anyhow, that extra voice you heard is not me being a ventriloquist, as people may believe. It is actually the voice of John Cage in the studio. And there were a few questions, but you're going to be performing? Are you actually performing at this new music concert on Friday?
No, I'm just there as a listener. You might say a listener's the performer, but I don't think you would.
I don't know what I would say these days. I would say the listener is the performer if the listener gets to interject stuff. Then the audience actually hears it.
Right.
And I was telling someone that you were going to be on the show, and he said, find out if it's for sure that John Cage gained his interest in mushrooms because it followed music in the dictionary. Tell me, is that true?
No, but once I was interested in mushrooms, I was able to explain it as not being too distant from music because it was right next to it in the dictionary.
I see. And are you still involved? I remember that you had given a lecture a few years ago on, I think it's called Mycology, is that correct?
Right.
And are you still involved with the group of mushroom collectors or interested parties?
I joined a group recently down in North Carolina because I was in Durham last summer for a while. I went hunting with them.
Mm-hmm. Find anything new?
I simply enjoy looking for mushrooms when I have the opportunity.
Okay. So it's like, I'm just curious what is the excitement about.
You mean
about.
Why it's so interesting?
Yeah, I know that they're very...
There was a beautiful article years ago in the New Yorker that reviewed a book by Alexander Smith
mm-hmm.
on mushrooms. And it began by saying that the dangers of lion hunting are largely imaginary, but the dangers of mushroom hunting are perfectly real. Mushrooms are not only a sport and a dangerous sport, but they have beautiful colors, and then if you get them home and don't kill yourself, they're perfectly delicious.
I remember once I found a giant puffball, and I hadn't told people, but it was the size of a football, and like, we took it home and had these sliced pieces, like a whole steak mm-hmm. of a piece of mushroom, and like 15 people ate. Seriously, it was the size of
right.
a football, and that was the beginning.
I had a large one like that once in Ann Arbor.
It's fun.
And I made a sauce of other mushrooms and made a kind of lasagna out of it.
This thing is so giant and it's very tasty, but mushroom on mushroom,
uh-huh.
I don't know. I'm concerned also about like your interest with people like Marshall McLuhan, and you've cited quite a few. I have zillions of articles, but you've paid homage to a number of people like Thoreau, James Joyce, Marcel Duchamp, Fuller.
And McLuhan.
And
In a text called Themes and Variations. And the themes were 15, I think it was 12 or 15, I forget now, people whose work and life had been very important to mine. There are more than that number, of course. But those were the first ones that came to my mind when I was writing that particular text.
We're going to, in a very Marshall McLuhan style, I have someone that has this wonderful quote of Marshall McLuhan talking about you, and what happened was he had read it to me over the telephone, and I had left it at home, and then I thought, Marshall McLuhan would love it if you read it over the air, so I'll be calling him during the next piece, and then we can have that quote. But one thing I wanted to say was I had met Peter Greenaway recently,
mm-hmm.
and he has done two films in particular that were based on your record, remotely based, Indeterminacy.
The one with the stars?
Yeah. And Peter Greenaway had these two films that were 90 little stories.
Right.
And he thought it was 92 stories in your Indeterminacy record. And in fact, he had met you, he said, and you told him that in fact it was 90 stories.
And I think it's 90. And the...
Well, your record has 90 and his films have 92.
Oh, really?
and he thought it was really funny that he had spent 2 years of his life based on something of yours, and it was an inaccuracy of
marvelous
numeric, and he thought you would like that.
Right.
So I'm glad you did. Also, these pieces that are being performed on Friday, what are they about?
The orchestra that's been brought together to play the music for the new music concerts is a young training orchestra, and it's mostly orchestras don't like to rehearse,
mm-hmm.
but this one was brought together with the idea of having a good deal of rehearsal of four modern works made mostly by people who are completely alive. One of the composers only is not living, Wallingford Rieger, but the rest of us are all here and kicking in Toronto.
Okay, well, since I have the luxury of having you on air live and on air via phonograph, I'm going to play a bit of you talking from that Indeterminacy record, because I read a quote about it in that Downbeat article. The current December Downbeat has an article called The Age of Cage, in case anyone would like to check it out. And I've seen this story quoted a number of times, and I think... Hey, oh, by the way, when I went into the magazine store to buy it, I said, "Do you have that Downbeat article?" And he said, "Yeah, there's that Cage interview in it. That's why it's selling so well." But anyway, I'll play this short story and then a little bit of John Cage's music, and we'll be back. Okay, here it goes.
Anybody who knows me knows this story. I am constantly telling it. Anyway, in that silent room, I heard two sounds, one high and one low. Afterward, I asked the engineer in charge why, if the room was so silent, I had heard two sounds. He said, "Describe them." I did. He said, "The high one was your nervous system in operation. The low one was your blood in circulation." Years ago in Chicago, I was asked to accompany two dancers who were providing entertainment at a businesswomen's dance party given in a hall of the YWCA. After the entertainment, the jukebox was turned on so everybody could dance. There was no orchestra. They were saving money. However, the goings-on became very expensive. One of the arms in the jukebox moved a selected record onto the turntable. The playing arm moved to an extraordinarily elevated position. After a slight pause, it came down rapidly and heavily on the record, smashing it. Another arm came into the situation and removed the debris. The first arm moved another selected record onto the turntable. The playing arm moved up again, paused, came down quickly, smashing the record. The debris was removed by the third arm, and so on. And meanwhile, all the flashing colored lights associated with jukeboxes worked perfectly, making the whole scene glamorous.
Okay. We're back. Presumably. And though nothing is sure, we have Bob Marshall on the telephone. He normally does a show here at CKLN called The International Connection, which sort of puts relationships of information together. How's that, Bob? Is that all right?
That's correct.
Okay, I hope everyone can hear him. Can you hear him?
Yes, I can.
Okay, then I presume the listening audience out there can as well. If you'll excuse me while I lower this.
His name again, Bob?
Bob Marshall.
Bob?
Hello.
Tell me, that article of Marshall McLuhan's called The Eigenbrite of Outwit has always been one of my favorite texts of his.
Yes, it's a hard article to get a hold of.
Anyway, I have a copy of it, and I've been making misostics.
With your computer?
With my computer, on Marshall McLuhan's name, through it. And it seemed to me that, I hear from you that the Eigenbrite of Outwit comes from Ulysses, but what does it mean there? Is it related by any chance to something of Gerard Manley Hopkins?
No, in particular, I think Marshall means that the extension of ourselves, our technologies, bite and rearrange our senses. And this causes a disorienting and trauma for humanity, or any group that uses any technology, and that would be the bite of the extension of our faculties or wits.
Right. And was there... I keep thinking that it has some connection with Hopkins, and you think it has none.
Well, it's curious that I'm the chief archivist for the McLuhan program here in Toronto, the underground
program. Oh, and I spoke with you on the phone a week or so ago, right?
No, that was the U of T program. I'm the underground archivist. I have the biggest collection of McLuhan materials probably in the world, other than the one they sold to the government in Ottawa. But the problem is, I was just discussing with my colleague 2 weeks ago that we don't have that article that you have, that you've just mentioned. I'd certainly like to have a Xerox of it, because we can't get it.
I can send you a copy.
Okay, or you can do it through Avila.
Yes, I can take care of that.
Great.
But do you want to mention that quote of McLuhan talking about John?
Well, first about that quote, the Eigenbrite of Outwit. I know that line, it's either inwit or outwit, is in Ulysses, but I don't know if Joyce got that from Gerard Manley Hopkins. But I know Marshall played with it.
Well, it's a marvelous article. I think you'll enjoy it when I send it to you.
Oh, I can hardly wait to read it, too, since I am the intermediary here. But, want to go ahead, Bob?
Okay. Is John aware of that quote being from Ulysses?
Yes, he is.
Okay, so that's clear. All right. Now, this is from an address by Marshall in 1965, and the section referring to you, John, begins, John Cage has a book called Silence, in which very early in the book he explains that silence consists of all of the unintended noise of the environment. All the things that are going on all the time in any environment, but things that were never programmed or intended, that is silence. The unheeded world is silence. That is what James Joyce calls thunder in the wake. In the wake, all the consequences of social change, all of the disturbances and metamorphoses resulting from technological change, create a vast environmental roar or thunder that is yet completely inaudible. It is like heat that in organic or other systems creates, quote, noise, unquote. If the environment or process of change gets going at a clip consistent with electronic information movement, it becomes very easy to perceive social patterns for the first time in human history. In the pre-electric age, patterns were imperceptible because change occurred just slowly enough to be invisible. And he ends the quote with, wasn't it Bertrand Russell who asked, if we were in a bath whose temperature rose half a degree an hour, how would we know when to scream?
Isn't that marvelous?
I love that. I heard the quote, Bob Marshall read that to me over the telephone, and we thought that was so wonderful. Oh, well. So how does it feel to have Marshall McLuhan, who you admire a great deal, saying such respectful things? I mean, I don't know whether you actually had...
I don't think Marshall McLuhan was saying that out of respect. He was a person who was alive in in every sense, and seeing, I think of him as a proper kind of critic.
Yeah, I had read in an article here where you had quoted him as being the best critic.
The person who saw what was happening in the world, and who, through writing about it, and makes it clear to us what our situation is.
Excuse me.
That's a beautiful sound.
Yeah. All of these sounds, sometimes, when I used to do a late night show...
We could make a duet.
Yeah, duet for mic stand. That's wonderful. Oh, dear.
Great.
Wait, can you get one there? I think mine's the best.
Yours is better.
Oh, there. Yeah, you can get reverb from the springs here.
Marvelous.
John Cage live on air. Well, maybe you can talk a bit about McLuhan and that kind of collaborations, or the collaborations with Duchamp. The last time you were in Toronto, no, the last time Marcel Duchamp played live was in Toronto here at Ryerson.
Right.
And
I think our program lasted about 4 or 5 hours, and it consisted of Marcel Duchamp and Madame Duchamp on one side of the chessboard, and I was on the other side. And the board had been made by Lowell Cross, who lived here in Toronto and who's now in Iowa at the university there. He had made it a chessboard so that our moves acted to open or close circuits that had in them music from four composers who were on the stage making live electronic music, but it wasn't audible unless our moves opened the gates that made it audible.
Did you record that?
Yes, it was recorded, and it was published in a book by Shigeko Kubota.
Oh.
Called Marcel Duchamp.
And
for that book, I wrote the misostics on his name.
Oh, you should tell me a bit more. I understand you have a computer, and you're trying to do misostics with...
Right.
Maybe we should start by saying what misostics are.
Well, it's a text like an acrostic, which is has the name going down the edge.
At the beginning of it.
Like. Right, and misostic is... meso means middle, so it's a name going down the middle.
And it's poems, yes?
Well, it's... instead of being in paragraphs, it's in separate lines, and some of the lines are short and some are longer, so it looks like a poem.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't a poem in the sense of rhyming or something else.
Well, I don't think poems have had to rhyme for years.
One misostic I made that's fairly easy for me to remember is on the name of a mushroom, on the name Morel, you know, the spring mushroom. And I had been asked by some music students at Interlaken in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
where we were about to go on a hunt for the Morels. I was asked to explain what a misostic was. So I made this one for them on the word Morel. And it says music. That's the M of Morel. And then the O is conducted. Music conducted. You see, after the M of music, you don't have an O until you have the second line, which is the O of Morel. So I couldn't have said music performed, because the R is in the word performed, and it belongs on the third line. You see?
Okay, performed.
So I had to say music conducted. So music conducted in spring, that's the R of Morel. Music conducted in spring.
Mm-hmm.
By trees.
Wait, in spring doesn't really fit, does it?
Yes, it has the R.
Spring.
M-O-R.
R.
You see, Morel, music is the M, Conducted is the O.
I get it.
Spring is the R.
Mm-hmm.
By trees, that's the E.
Uh-huh.
And then a colon.
Uh-huh.
And then the L is Dutch elm disease.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So I'm really interested about computers because I've been waiting for real art, excuse me, to be done, like people really using computers to do what they have the idea
right.
for all along, and they're trying to do it and computer aiding them.
I have a program now called MesoList, which I'm enjoying very much. It was made for me by Jim Rosenberg, who's a poet and lives near Pittsburgh. And used in combination with another program, E, or it's actually the letter I, but it's the I Ching. It works this way, that taking, say, the text that we mentioned of Marshall McLuhan's, the Eigenbite of Outwit, we can list in that text, once it's in the memory of the computer, we can list all the words that satisfy the rule of the misostic for the M, for the A, for the R, for all the letters of his name.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can use the I Ching, a program made for me by Andrew Culver, who's a young Canadian composer. We can use that to find which one in the list shall be used for this particular poem.
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, I don't have an example in my mind to recite for you.
Oh, dear.
But it means that you can write using a different text, you can write a different poem at more or less at the drop of a hat, or rather the push of a few keys.
Wonderful. I had seen a program that was done by someone in Toronto, and what it was there was different adjectives and different nouns,
mm-hmm.
and at the drop of a hat or the push of a key,
mm-hmm.
it would compose whole sentences with, you know, an adjective before the noun, and you'd have the funniest stories, and it was just the computer picking randomly.
What I think is important, at least for me, in the use of the computer is to leave room for activity on my part in connection with the activity on the computer's part, so that the work isn't finished when the output comes, but something has to be done to
make it more yours.
Well, make it more lively.
Great. I'm going to have to interrupt. I'll play a bit of a new record here to the station. John Cage brought it in by himself. And then we'll have more talking after that.
This is CKLN FM 88.1 in Toronto.
In fact, it's true, you are listening to CKLN, and in case you've just tuned in, we have all this sound. Where is it all coming? It's not coming from here, it's coming from there. There, that was quite nice. It sounds like the beach. Doesn't it? It's just white noise, I guess. I'm controlling it here. Look what I found. But that is John Cage in the studio with me. And I guess what 20th century composer is the tag I'll put on you for today, John. I hope you don't mind. I'm sure you get lots of them. But how do you see experimental music changing now? Because when you came out with your ideas, though they've influenced probably the majority of composers of our time now, they were quite, shocking to people to consider having a silent piece, that is to say that the unintended sounds of the area were playing the music. Right.
Now things have changed greatly. It seems to me that number of different kinds of music is extraordinary now, so that I don't think you can say that music is going in one direction.
I think it is going in, excuse me for interrupting, but
you do?
I think it is going in the fact that a lot of things can happen now. That acceptance is a direction, don't you think?
Oh, well, if you say that, that's true. But what we're in is a field of, an enormous field of possibilities. And nothing is something that one shouldn't do or shouldn't explore. No possibility. And all the new possibilities come about through new technology and through the interpenetration of different cultures that were formerly separate, and then I think most importantly come about through the fact of more people having ideas and there being more people who are alive and working.
Well, I think it's also with the technology, the facility of me having an idea and sending you a cassette of it and you thinking it's great or terrible.
True.
And sending it back to me.
True.
The fact that four-track tape recorders are becoming quite common, that people can do multi-track recording amateur style, or video cameras, and that whole electronic age has made it very easy for us to live in a more, well, you know, global sort
right,
of sense.
Right. That marvelous expression of McLuhan's of brushing information.
Well, that one I hadn't heard yet, but it is.
It was his idea that work, as we formerly knew it, is obsolete, and that all that we have to do now is to brush information against information.
How do you see that happening?
Well, with the tape recorder she just mentioned.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I'm not misreading anything. And so, what kind of elements would you like to see brought into it? I understand you heard Glenn Branca's music. That's, I think he plays electric guitar.
I've heard it twice. Once in Chicago and once in Seattle. I haven't heard it since then.
But you didn't like it?
I didn't like it at the very first. But I'm more open to it now than I was. What I didn't like about it at first was not only its being so extremely loud, but the fact that there were 12 people following and imitating what Glenn Branca himself was doing, so that it ended by 13 people doing the same thing, everyone following the leader. But when I heard him in Seattle, there were, so to speak, two leaders. One was Glenn Branca, and the other was the percussionist, whose name I don't recall. And that division between the leadership of one or the other made a situation that was more flexible, I thought. I think he's obviously a lively person in the musical world.
That's it.
And I think I'll go shortly to hear what he's doing again.
That's good. That's very good. I understand you saw Ornette Coleman. Did you actually see him? Or no?
No, it was years ago that Coleman and I gave a program together in
together?
New York. Yes.
Wonderful. Where was that?
It was in New York. Not in a very large place either. It was, as I recall, it was an art gallery.
And what was the program?
I think it alternated work on his part and work on my part.
I went to see that show on Sunday, and I was so surprised by how exciting and how much fun he was having. I thought that there were problems with some of the musicians, in that I don't think they had the same idea of the music as he did. But that's another story. I'm curious also that you're using the word lively as a descriptive term often today. Do you want to elaborate on that? You were saying about adding stuff to your computer information to make it more lively.
I think what I mean by that is something that engages my interest and keeps my attention on whatever I'm doing. If I don't have something to do with respect to a computer output, my attention can move from it to anything in the environment rather quickly. But if I think of the output as something to be changed, then my attention is kept on it, and that's when I would use the word lively.
Thanks. I have a... Well, no. No, I asked a question. But next for you, I have an Erik Satie piece that I thought...
Oh, that's great.
...would be nice to play.
One of my projects now is to make a lecture on the work of Satie that will be given in Bonn, in Germany, in late March. And while the lecture is being given, the furniture music of Satie will be played at different and changing points in space wherever the lecture is given, so that in the distance there'll be these three kinds of music being played while I'm talking.
Sounds wonderful. I hope you'll end up bringing it to Toronto. Oh, boy. I saw Oratorio, and I enjoyed, one of the things I enjoyed most of it was watching, first of all, I thought I was in a circus, and then I really enjoyed all the scores. I enjoyed watching all the scores changing and moving. I think that was the one where you allowed people to walk around in the hall.
Mm-hmm.
And that I thought was really exciting as a new direction. Anyhow, next I'm playing a piece by Eric Satie. You are listening to CKLN. It is Arella, and I have John Cage in the studio. And here is the work of Eric Satie.
Thank you.
Well, that settee music is now over. And we only have a few more minutes. Mike Dyer, who comes in after us, has consented to us going 5 minutes overtime. The hour has spinned by, hasn't it, John?
Spun.
Spun. spun by. Spun by is correct. Oh, how embarrassing.
What are you going to play now?
Oh, yes, this five waltzes for the nine bros, or nine waltzes for the...
49, isn't it?
Well, you're the person who has every right to correct me.
49?
I'll find the title of it, don't you worry. 49 waltzes for the five boroughs.
Right.
I'm sorry. This is like the piece in the Annie Hall movie where someone gets corrected in a movie lineup by Marshall McLuhan. Like, he keeps on talking about Marshall McLuhan, and then Marshall McLuhan steps up and says, "Let me correct you on that." Anyway.
And I think what you're going to play, if you play it, is something that I haven't heard.
Yeah, you haven't heard
because
this
piece. Because I didn't make the realization of it. It's one of the pieces of mine that is indeterminate and that can have many different
versions.
And I think the one on this record was made by Robert Moran. Is that true?
That's true. That's true. John Cobb, Alan Feinberg, and Ivar
Mikasha.
I met him.
He's down in Buffalo.
Yeah, he came up for the New Music concert opening, and I met him at that.
Is Buffalo a suburb of Toronto?
More or less, in the same way that Toronto's a suburb of New York.
A Buffalo?
No, of Manhattan.
Right.
It's the same kind of thing. It's also a hazard of the new sort of communication devices that we can have it.
Do you live in Toronto now, but you've also lived in New York?
Yeah, I have lived in New York, and I
don't you enjoy Toronto?
Yeah, I think I have it really in an ideal fashion, in that I can sort of go back and forth, and I can work at ear.
Beautiful.
And then come back here and really enjoy Toronto, and then really enjoy New York. Whereas when I actually lived solidly in New York, I found it very, very hectic. But, it's really crazy, and it really takes hold of you. And I know you were living in the West.
I love New York.
Yeah, but do you...
But I like Toronto, too.
It's nice to sort of hop back and forth, so to speak, because otherwise it's just too difficult. In any case, so this piece, do you want to talk a bit about it or not?
I used a map of the five boroughs to make I made a kind of
score
connecting different places, different streets through chance operations, and you see, if I connected three places, then I called that a waltz. And I made 49 such triangles that covered the map of the five boroughs. And my notion was that one could go then to those different places and make recordings, or one could go to those different places and perform. There were a variety of things that could be done to make something out of sound. I only gave one performance of that piece.
How many other performances have been done of that?
I think a number of people have made them. This one that's on the record, I haven't heard. I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, that sounds great. I just wanted to also mention that, is it the Freeman Etudes, which
right.
uses the star? No, it's not the Freeman Etudes.
Well, yes, they use star maps.
Oh, it is?
And so do the Etude Australis.
That's right.
And
that's
Atlas Eclipticalis. A lot of my work since the 1960, when I was at Wesleyan University, and where I found the first star maps that I used, uses star maps, because you see the stars are easily traced and can exist in music as notes, particularly if the space on the page is equal to time, then you don't need the lines and flags of quarter notes and eighth notes.
And then it really becomes relative.
Right.
In any case, I think that's where I'll end this John Cage afternoon. And I thank you, John, for coming by.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. And here is that 49 waltzes for five boroughs. I'm terrible with numbers. at CKLN.
Zwei, drei. One, two, three. Two hearts in.
New Source Radio. This is 88.1 CKLN FM.